Recording and share screen. Okay, we're good. Everybody there? Working for everybody? Okay. So as promised, we finished our discussion on the initial discussion of the role of the relationship between Uriah and Bathsheba and David's context or sort of self-justification of the relationship with Bathsheba. We discussed Uriah and his insubordination, and we have discussed Yoav and his role in implementing David's decree that Uriah should be killed for his insubordination. The last piece of this chapter before we move on to chapter 12 and the nevuah of Natan and his rebuke and ultimately the punishment for David. The last piece that I want to deal with is some aspects of David's role that we haven't yet touched on. And they're central to understanding how all of this comes about and where how it comes about and where it's going. And I want to start with the question of how the circumstances enabled David, who heretofore has been such an extraordinary leader, role model, moral anchor for his people, how is it possible that circumstances reached this point where David has fallen literally down the rabbit hole into one chait after another, from Bathsheba to Uriah to Yoav, and now eventually to this conversation with the Navi. So several variables that we haven't yet addressed that we need to look at. And I want to start actually with the question of the opening to Psukim of Perek Yud Aleph. So I want to go back to the beginning. Vehi l'tshuvat ha'shana le'et tzeit ha'melachim came to pass at the time when the kings go into battle. There's an interesting word here, ha'melachim, which is spelt malach, which means a messenger or representative. But if you look at the nikud, if you look at the vowels, you'll see that if the root of the word was malach, it would be hamalachim. The shvad of the mem, you forgive me for getting a little technical in the grammar of it, but the vocalization of hamalachim would be the vowels if there was no aleph, hamalachim, the kings. And hence the translation, generally, according to most Mefarshim, follows the vowels. And so the phrase here is le'et tzeit ha'melachim, when kings go into battle. Time, and it's seasonal. The Mefarshim suggests that there are certain seasons when it's more common to go into battle. Nobody wants to go into battle in the dead of winter. Napoleon made that mistake. And so there are certain seasons when it's easier to go into battle. And so this is certainly one of them. Why that's relevant here, we'll see in a few minutes. But Vaishlach David et Yoav et Avadav imo et Kol Yisrael Vaishchitu et Bnei Amon Vayatsuru al Rabbah. David sent Yoav and his servants with him and all of Israel and the army, and the mission to destroy, to conquer Bnei Amon. And so they besieged the city of Rabbah, Vayatsuru al Rabbah. V'David Yosheb Yerushalayim. And David returned to Yerushalayim. Or sat, or dwelt, or tarried, or waited, or was in Yerushalayim. Vayi le'et ha'erev, it came to pass in the evening, vayakom David mi'al mishkavo. David rose, couldn't sleep, or whatever the circumstances were. He arose from his bed, vayitalech al gag bet ha'melech, he was walking upon the roof of his house. Vayar yisharo chetzet, and mi'al gag, from his rooftop, he saw a woman bathing, and the rest of that story we discussed way back when at the beginning of the year, Eishat Tabat Meir Ma'od, and The rest, as we say, is history. So what I want to focus on for now, for today, is the significance of David Yoshev B'Yerushalayim. What message, what issue, certainly the circumstances are such that were David not in Yerushalayim, perhaps he would not have seen Bathsheba, and this whole story would not have begun. And so the circumstances begin clearly from the vantage point of the fact that David is in Yerushalayim. Is that necessarily a critique of David, or is this just a matter-of-fact statement, David happens to be in Yerushalayim? The interesting thing is that with one exception, and we're going to talk about that exception in a moment, but with one exception, the Mefarshim seem to ignore the phrase, V'David Yoshev Yerushalayim. If I look up the, here's a Mikra'ot Gedolot. One of the interesting things about this website is that you can pull a Mikra'ot Gedolot literally off the, online. And these are all the Mefarshim on this phrase, V'David Yoshev Yerushalayim on Pasuk Aleph. Eight Seta Malachim, Hem Yomot Chama, the summer, She'esim Matsui Levem Tam, it's easier to go to war because the grass is available for the animals for grazing. That's the Tshuvat Hashana, the end of the year, a year from the original battle with Ammon. And that's all the Mefarshim seem to, with one exception, we'll come to the Malbim in a few minutes, seem to focus on. There's no real discussion here, as you can see from the headings, of the phrase V'David Yoshev B'Yerushalayim. So the question is, what is the significance of that statement? Is there an issue? And on the one hand, I could paint a simple picture that David is in Yerushalayim because Yatsuru Arabad, they're about to embark on a siege war of Ammon. That siege war is likely to take a significant amount of time. And David is a king, right? David has many duties and responsibilities. And so he leaves Yoav to handle the battle and he goes back to Yerushalayim to deal with the political stuff that he has to deal with. More along the lines of what I mentioned last week, which is the Gemara that says that David oseh mishpatu tzedakah l'chol amo v'Yoav al ben Tzruya l'tzava. Based on the pasuk in Sefer Shmuel, that David is able to engage in the leadership of Israel, mishpat, tzedakah, the judicial role, the political role, because he knows and he can rely on Yoav to handle the military context for Yoav al Hatzavah. David's role in this battle will eventually come at the end in Perek Yud Bet when Yoav breaches the walls and breaks through the siege. And at that point, David, with the rest of his army, comes to join the fray. Kind of when the siege is over, then he'll call David to join the battle. And in the meantime, David can make do with reports, regular reports from the battlefield, as he had with Uriah and as we saw with Yoav. More or less, I would have to assume that that's how the majority of the Mefarshim see this context, because nobody seems to pay attention or make an issue out of the fact that David Yoshev B'Yerushalayim, as I said, with the exception of the Malbim. The Malbim, on the other hand, is a fascinating perspective. And the Malbim, I think, recognizes that there's a nuance in this text that we need to recognize. Several challenges that emerge from a straightforward reading of the pasuk. The first is that there seems to be some sort of contrast. Le'et tzet ha-melachim, at the time when kings go to war, would imply that this is a time, if there's a war to happen, right, these are the times that the kings go to war, and yet David Yoshev B'Yerushalayim. So is that, and yet David is in Yerushalayim, or is that, okay, so he sent Yoav to war and he's too busy. Right? What's the contrast between Le'et Tzeta Malachim and David Yoshev B'Yerushalayim sets up for us a kind of tension that where is David in this battle? He's in Yerushalayim, and that leads to, unfortunately, things that should not have happened. That's one aspect of it. Similarly, V'David Yoshev B'Yerushalayim leads right into Vayila et ha'erev, Vayakom David mi'al mishkavo. There's no break between this phrase, Vayi David yosheb Yerushalayim, Vayila et ha'erev. He's in Yerushalayim, and that right away we see the story of Batsheva takes place, seems to connect the two. Add to that the fact that even though he suggested that David has a role in the battle of Rabbah at the end when he comes to fight together with Yoav, it's not clear that that was always the intention. From the way the story plays out in Perek Yud Bet, and I think we looked at this, the end of Perek Yud Bet, which is the breach of Amon, is really earlier than the rest of the Perek. I think I told you, we discussed that before. But once Yoav breaks through the wall, Vayishlach Yoav Malachim al David vayomen al chamti b'Rabah gam lakadati adir amayim, I've fought against Rabah, I've taken the city, ata sof yeter am mechane al ha'ir v'lochda, now come, gather the rest of the army and join us, pen el kod ani et ha'ir v'nikra shmi aleha, lest I take the city and be called by my name and my victory. Yoav seems to almost threaten David with a kind of an implied reference that, you know, it's now or never. You're sitting in Yerushalayim for too long. Better come, or else you're going to pay a very heavy political price for it. Again, we talk about it from Yoav's perspective, but from David's perspective, that seems to imply that maybe David had not intended to join this battle, and that he was in fact planning to stay in Yerushalayim. David himself challenges Yoav and pushes Yoav to finish this campaign quickly. David says to the Malach, to the messenger who comes to report about the failure of the battle with the first campaign with Uriah, when he says to him, tell your general, tell Yoav, hachazek b'chamtacha la'ir v'orsa v'chazkehu, be strong against the city, overthrow it, encourage him to do so. David is pushing Yoav to finish the battle against Ammon. And when it happens, Yoav has to kind of pull David into the battle. It reads almost as if there is a significant reluctance on David's part to get involved in this campaign. And that's odd, right? That's really an extraordinarily challenging and disturbing development. So let's start with the Malbim. The Malbim is that's fascinating. There seems to be this impression amongst many, not sure where it comes from, that the Mefarshim kind of take the approach of attempting to whitewash David and explain away all his sins. And in general, that there seems to be an impression that classic and traditional Mefarshim tend to be kinder on biblical personalities than they deserve. I don't think that that's true. And the Malbim, I think, is a classic example. And if you want to look at it from that perspective, just ask yourself, how kind is the Malbim being to David in this description? So here's what the Malbim says on this first pasuk. Vayhi l'tshuvat ha'shana. Yirmoz, this tells us in Remez, it's a hint. She'al yedei she'yashav ha'melech b'veito, because the king sat in his house, ולא הלך בעצמו ללחום מלחמות השם, and he himself did not go to fight the battles, God's battles. Therefore, Bama says Uliado. That's how this whole story of Batsheva came about. And now the Malbim, which is just methodological.
So that's David's first sin?
In other words, that's where it all begins. It all begins with the fact that David doesn't join the battle. Had he been in Rabat, if he had been in Rabat, had he been on the battlefield together with Yoav, this would never have happened. That's what the Malbim is, and he'll say it much more explicitly in a minute. And true to the Malbim's character, the Malbim works through the nuance of every phrase in the text. It's part of his methodology of this commentary. So he goes, he wants to try to understand why, what does the phrase mean when it says le'et seta malachim? And what does the phrase mean when it says vahi le'et ha'erev, etc. So we're going to get to each of these phrases. ולבל תאמר שהיה יגיע ורפא ידיים ממלחמה הקודמת, lest you say that, oh, David needs a break, he needs a vacation, he's exhausted. David, the fighting Ammon, and he's fighting in Aram, and he's fighting in the north, and David is tired, and he's weary, and he's been fighting for so long. Let's be a little understanding of David. Says the Malbim, lest you say this, Amar she'ala tshuvat hashana. It tells us that this battle is a year later. Now, the Malbim's understanding of that is that there's been a year break of war. No wars in the past year. That happens to be the one piece of the Malbim's interpretation that I'm not sure is correct, because the reference to tshuvat hashana is the year between the first battle of Ammon and the second battle of Ammon. But in between was the war with Aram in the north, and the war with Edom, and the war with Moab. So Ammon is the last step, Ba'ilu Tshuvat HaShana, a year later. But there's been a lot of wars in between. So this particular point, I'm not sure the Malbim, I agree with the Malbim, but nonetheless, that's what he says. Ulaval Tachshov, Shalo Aya Et Ra'ui Letzet, Mipnei Hakor V'Ageshem. Maybe it was the middle of the winter, and David didn't go to war because he didn't think it was a good time to go to war. So therefore, the text says, "Le'et tzeit ha-malachim." This is the time the kings go to war. This is the season. Ki'ah b'chodesh Sivan. It was in the month of Sivan, in the summer months. She'chol malchei eretz yotzim ufnehem b'krav. That's when kings lead their battles, because the weather is on their side. U'leval tomar she'ita milchama k'tana. Unless you think that this was a minor skirmish, not deserving of the attention of the king. The king is far busier than this little tiny skirmish. Therefore, it tells us that this was a battle that was Yoav, the general, and all of his soldiers and the warriors, Shem Sarei Achayav HaGiborim, that core fighting force of the Tzva HaGiborim, together with Kol Yisrael, as Uriah describes, all of Israel encamped on the bank, waiting. This was a major campaign. Uvizeh haya ra'ui she'elech malkam lifnehem, and therefore the king should have gone with them. And this was a battle against Ammon, which was going to take a long time, and it was a great siege. This was a long, protracted battle. And nonetheless, David sitting in Yerushalayim, not coming to aid those who are fighting the battle for the city and for the people of God. Pasuk Bet, Vayhi L'tshuvat L'et Ha'erev, it came to be, and here the Malbim, if you think the Malbim was harsh till now, and here the Malbim doesn't spare the whip, it says, Vayhi L'et Ha'erev, why in the evening? Tzono Lamar, V'gam B'Veito, even when he was at home, even in his house, even in his palace. Lo Haya Tarud B'Tzorchei Ha'am, David wasn't engaged in the needs of the people and the politics and the mishpat and the judicial process. He was in the middle of the night getting up and having and spazieren and taking the walks. And here he quotes Yerushalmi that Kshaya David Su'ed Sudat Atzmo Ayyashena de Tesha Sha'ot. When David ate a meal by himself, meaning a small, modest meal, then he would sleep until the ninth hour. But when he would eat a meal, breakfast of kings, as they say, right? Or lunch of or dinner of kings, when he would eat a meal fit for a king, then he would sleep all the way until he'd go to sleep after dinner, and he would sleep until nighttime. Then he would get up and he'd be energized. Be'im Kain, says the Malbim, Sa'ad az sudat melachim. That means that he got up in the middle of at night because he was gorging himself in a meal fit for kings. Umit'aneg b'tanugim, with baths and oils and whatever else you want to have. And he's still not engaged in communal affairs. But he went on a spazier on the rooftop of the king.
Maybe he had indigestion.
Hang on a second. And that's what led him to transgress. From there he saw a woman bathing, things he shouldn't have seen, etc., etc. He wasn't engaged, you'll forgive the expression, he wasn't engaged in communal affairs, he was engaged in affairs of a different kind.
Slippery slope.
Extraordinary statement to the mob. And it all starts from the fact that David was, I don't know, lazy or whatever the circumstances were. We'll talk about why he's in Yerushalayim. But it all starts in the fact that David belongs on the battlefield with his army, and instead he is sitting in Yerushalayim where he doesn't belong. And that starts a series of events that ultimately leads down the path to Bathsheba. There was a question. Who had a question? Somebody raised a question.
I just said that it's like a slippery slope.
Yes, for sure. For sure. But it's even more than a slippery slope, because as we'll see, the very fact that he chose to be in Yerushalayim is in itself part of the problem.
Is this the first time that there was a regular battle or an important battle that he didn't go?
That is an excellent question. Is this the first time that there's a regular battle to which he did not go? The short answer to your question is, it depends. I'll come back to this, Rashi. Well, let's do this out of order, just because I might as well answer your question first. There are only two other places in Sefer Shmuel where we find a discussion about David not participating in a battle. And they are significant. So I want to take a quick glance at them, and you'll see what I am, and you'll see what I'm referring to. So let's do this. Let's open up another tab. And go to, oops, come on. All right, let's go to Shmuel Bet Perek Chaf Aleph. Now, the context of Shmuel Bet Perek Chaf Aleph needs a little bit of explanation. I think we've talked about this before, the last bunch of chapters of the Sefer, really Perek, from Chaf Aleph to the end, is a postscript. From an editorial perspective, it's a postscript on the book. There are a series of chapters that belong much earlier. How that comes about from an editing perspective, why these chapters are annexed to the end of the book, it's unclear. We'll talk about that a little bit when we get to these chapters, but there's no question that David, Perek Chaf, David is returning from the battle of Avshalom and coming back to Yerushalayim. You'll see that the end of that chapter is a kind of a summary on David's life. Yoav al kol hatzava, David is, Yoav is in charge of the army, Bnei Yao ben Yoyada al hakreti v'al hapreti, Adoram is in charge of the mass, Yoshafat ben Achilud is the recorder, Shiva is the sofer, Tzadok v'Evyatar the kohanim. It's kind of a summary. Okay, this is David's kingdom. Perek of Aleph is a very different perek. Perek of Aleph, Vayira Abi Me David Shaloshanim, this is a much earlier event. This has nothing to do with the Gibbonim and the children of Shaul. This is much earlier. So there's a whole series of these chapters and events that are earlier in the story. So, for example, if you take a look at the end of this parak, "Bati od milchama laplishtim et Yisrael," it's a war between the plishtim and Israel. Now, the plishtim are gone. By the end of the story of David and the conquest of Yerushalayim and the plishtim and the war in the north and the war with Shaul with Avshalom, the Plishtim are no longer a player. So clearly, if David is fighting Plishtim, this means that this is a much earlier event. And most likely, even before he became king, most likely when he was still running with his band of warriors and fighting the Plishtim in the south. David and his army went down to fight against the Plishtim, and David, for whatever reason, was tired, was faint. Yishbi Benov ben Asher Yibilidei Rafa was one of the sons of the giants. Mishkal Keno Shloshmot, Mishkal Nechoshet V'chagor Chadashah, his spear was 300 shekels in brass. We had no armor. Vayomer Lakot et David. And he wanted to slay David. So you have this combination of Vayav David. David was tired and exhausted from the battle, and Yishbi Benov decided that he made it his business to kind of slay David. Avishai ben Tsruya. So Avishai ben Tsruya, remember there's his nephews, Avishai, Asael, and Yoav, came to his aid, and he smote the Philistine, killed him. And now they have a dilemma. And the dilemma is that this is probably the closest David ever came to actually dying on the battlefield. So as nishbu'u anshei David lo lemor, so the men of David swore to David, saying, lo tetze od itano lemilchama, v'lo techaber et nei Yisrael. You shall not go out to war with us anymore. We do not want the light of Israel to be extinguished. You stay and manage the war from the lead tent. We'll take care of the battle. That was the request made at that time. That's one instance. The other instance is a couple of chapters earlier, but now we're moving many years later, meaning in the battle, in the rebellion of Avshalom, which is after the events that we're discussing, the rebellion of Avshalom, as they go to war with Avshalom's army on the east side of the Yarden. Meshlach David et Am Ashtishit Biyad Yoav, Ashtishit Biyad Avishai Ben Tsruya Achi Yoav, Ashtishit Biyad Itai Giti. David sent his entire army to quell the rebellion of Avshalom, divided the army into three parts, one part under the leadership of Yoav, one part under the leadership of Avishai, and the third under the leadership of Ittai Giti. And David said, I'm also going with you. The people said to him, not so fast. We're not going to let you come. If we flee, nobody's going to care. Half of us could die and nobody would care. But now you, with an aleph, are like 10,000 of us. Better that you lead from the city. So these are the only two reference points that we have, moments when the conversation between David and his army was that David wanted to go into battle, and the soldiers or the leadership said to David not to come. But these are unique circumstances, and what makes them unique is twofold. Number one, each one for a different reason. In the case of Yishbi Benov, the Plishtim, which is a much earlier event, there's no organized army. David is not king yet. They're fighting guerrilla warfare with this handful of soldiers. And there was a fear that David would lose his life on the battlefield. And so his men kind of covered for him and said, this time you're not going. They were fighting giants, they were fighting the Plishtim, they were fighting an army of Goliaths. And the second here is also unique in the sense that this is after the story of David and Bathsheba, after the rebellion of Avshalom, after David is exiled from, actually not even yet, after the story of Amnon and Tamar, and after the death of Amnon in the hands of Avshalom, and after Avshalom is exiled, and after David agrees to bring Avshalom back, And then after Avshalom leads a rebellion and steals David's wives and exiles David from Yerushalayim. And now there's a great civil war between David and the forces of David and the forces of Avshalom. All of this in the aftermath of David and Bathsheba. David is broken. David is clearly broken. And morally, emotionally, I'm not convinced that they asked David to stay behind because they were concerned for his success as a warrior, as much as they were convinced that David was at that point unable to lead them into battle. And so the people say to him, don't come with us. But in both of these instances, David wants to go to battle. And it's the people, the soldiers, who are saying to him, not now. This isn't the time. Which from the exceptions, we can derive the rule, which is that in most other cases, almost every other case, David went with the people into battle. And he went with the army and he fought the battle. We see that over and over again, right? Throughout the Sefer Shmuel, every battle that David has ever fought has been with his band of 400 men or 600 men or as king of Israel, Yerushalayim, the Plishtim, the Kil'ah, Nabal HaKarmeli. Every battle that we've seen with David has had David at the head of the army. Never once has there been a circumstance where David has sent his army out to fight the battles and David stay behind to bath and to have a good meal. It's just extraordinary. I'll go one step further. Let's go back to that source page for a second. This is a pasuk in Dvarim. I want to show it to you because I want to show you Rashi on this pasuk. In the context of the transition from Moshe to Yehoshua, pasuk says, "Vatzavet Yehoshua," God says to Moshe, "Command Yehoshua, instruct him. Chazkeu ve'amtzeu, chazak ve'amatz, be strong and courageous. Give him courage. Give him strength. Ki hu yavor lifnei ha'am hazeh, he will go before this people." He will enable them to conquer and to inherit this land that you shall see. So now you're handing over the reins of leadership to Yehoshua. Now, la'avor lifnei ha'am is a half the phrase, latzeit v'lavor, which is a military context, meaning to lead the army of Israel. Says Rashi, quoting a sifrei, ki hu ya'avor, im ya'avor lifnehem in chalu. If Yehoshua understands that he will go before the people and lead them in the battle, then they will inherit, they will be successful on the battlefield. But if Yehoshua does not go with them, then they will be unsuccessful. Their success will be totally dependent upon the leader leading them, not instructing or sending them. And there's one instance where this plays out. And it's a story we're going to look at in a couple of weeks from a different angle. But says the Medrash, V'chein ata motze, kishishalach min ha'am ela'ai, when Yehoshua sent the people to the battle of Ai. V'hu yeshav, and he did not go. So at that moment, the one place where Yehoshua sent the people into battle, and he himself did not lead the people. In that battle, they were smitten, they were defeated. Let me just show you that. Let me show you what we're talking about. It might be easier to do a quick refresher. It's a very important story for us because we're going to see it plays out later as well. This is Yehoshua Perek Zayin. I'm going to leave out the story of Achan for now. We'll come back to it. Vayishlach Yehoshua anashim miyurcho ha'ay asher mbeit aven mikedon lebeit el. Yehoshua sent spies from Yericho to Ai, which is near Beit El. And he said to them, alu v'raglu at ha'aretz, go spy out the land. Tell me what we're dealing with Ai. Vayishuvu al Yehoshua vayamru elav. They came back to Yehoshua. They said, al ya'al et kol ha'am. Don't take all the people there. It's a small city. It's easy to defeat. You only need 2,000, 3,000 men. You don't need the whole army. 2 or 3,000 ya'aluv ya'ku et ha'ay. Al ti'yagash sham et kol ha'am. Kimat ema. Don't toil. Don't weary the people. Don't make them tired by bringing everybody out there. There are a few handful of people. It's a city of 10,000, 12,000 men, 12,000 people. So about 3,000 people went up, and they ended up running from before Ai and being defeated by the city of Ai, the soldiers behind the walls of the walled city of Ai. About 36 men of Ai men of Israel were killed. And they chased the remaining army all the way, and the heart of the people were melted, became like water. Yeshua tore his clothing and he fell on the ground and he cried before God and he put ashes on his head. Why did you bother bringing us over the Jordan to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites, to destroy us? Would it be not better that we would have stayed on the other side of the Yarden? What am I going to say now that Israel has turned their backs to their enemies, meaning fled? The Canaanites will hear and they'll come and destroy us. God says to Yeshua, get up. Why are you on your face? So first he deals with the story of Achan, and we'll address the story of Achan in another shir, Achatai Yisrael, etc., etc. The rest of the parak deals with Achan. And then in beginning of parak chet, God says to Yeshua, don't be afraid. Take the entire army of Israel and go fight against Ai. I will give them into your hands. And therefore, Yeshua then takes all of Israel and he leads the battle against Ai. So that's exactly what the Medrash picks up on, that the difference between the first battle of Ai and the second battle of Ai, besides the numbers of the army, was Yeshua's participation. In the first instance, Yeshua sent 2,000, 3,000 soldiers. In the second instance, Yeshua led the people. And the Medrash says that's the key to the success of the army of Israel. In the first instance, who yeshav, he remained behind, and the result was they were defeated. When he fell on his face to cry, God said to him, "Kum lach, get up." Lach k'tiv, meaning atahu omed bimkomcha umeshalech et banai l'milchama. You, Yeshua, are sitting here in your place and sending my children into battle. Why are you on your face? I did not warn you when I said to Moshe, tell Yoshua, if he goes before the people, they will be successful. And if not, they won't. You need to lead. You need to tell your soldiers, follow me. You can't say to your soldiers, go, I'll catch up. Yaakov, in a certain sense, did that when he crossed over the Yabok River and he sent everybody ahead and he remained behind alone. And the result was, Ve'avekishimo, he had the battle with the Malach. You cannot separate from the people. So all of this leads us back to this Malbim's statement that the beginning of the story starts with David's decision to remain in Yerushalayim and send Yoav into battle. So the real question that we need to address is why? Why did David do this? Never before, he's never instructed his soldiers, you go, I'm too busy, or I'm going to stay behind. There are two other instances, as I mentioned before, where he doesn't go into battle, but where the people request from him because of the circumstances that this one you sit out. But that came from the generals, that came from the people, that didn't come from David. So what I'd like to do with the time remaining, I'll pause for a moment for questions, but what I'd like to do with the time remaining and for next week is to look at what I think are two possible kind of sources or reasons for why David chose to remain behind in Yerushalayim, each of which points to a different problem. In other words, there's no real justification for why David chose to remain in Yerushalayim. There are several possibilities, but each one represents or identifies a different problem that is at the core of this moment in David's, this moment of crisis in David's life. So we're going to look at that in a second, but I just want to take a pause for a moment to, is there any questions on where we're, what we've established so far? If not, then I'm going to charge ahead and suggest that there are, in fact, two possibilities, and I think they're both correct. One has to do with the fact that this is a critical moment for David in terms of his relationship with war, especially these wars. And David has been an extraordinary warrior from the day he comes into the story. But there reaches a point where the constant battle after battle after battle takes its toll. And I think that we've reached a critical moment for David where he has reached the end of his tolerance for these kinds of wars. And it plays out. It plays out in the moral fiber of the army. It plays out in the moral fiber of David and his behavior. David is tired. And despite the fact that the Malbim makes the reference here, don't say that he's tired, because it's all, he had a whole year break. He didn't have a year break. He's been fighting literally day after day after day. But to understand the extent to which he's been fighting, we looked at the list of David's battles sessions ago, I think, but I want to look at the entire breadth of it, meaning the whole context of David's life. And what I've listed here in this chart is more or less the sequence of battles, wars, and campaigns that David has fought from Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud Zayin to Shmuel Bet Perek Yud Aleph, meaning Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud Zayin is the first chapter we find David. David battle against Goliath. David comes to Shaul. David is sent by his father to go bring food to his brothers and to check on their well-being, and he finds the entire army of Israel immobilized in fear because of this giant Goliath who's threatened them with a war of champions. And nobody wants to challenge Goliath, not even Shaul, who is the most logical choice to challenge Goliath, because Shaul is the tallest of all of the soldiers of Israel, and Goliath was chosen as because he was a giant. From many perspectives, Shaul's primary mission in life was to challenge Goliath, because that's why you choose a tall warrior to fight the tall Plishtim. And instead, Shaul is immobilized with fear. David comes along, famous battle, Emek Ha'ilah, with the with the stones. And as we say, the rest was history. That's where David begins. The story of David begins in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Zayin. From that point forward, I'm going to do a quick summary of all the campaigns of David. Perek Yud Chet, after the battle of Goyath, Shaul says to David, you be my armor bearer, and you fight the battles against the Plishtim, and David is fighting as part of the army of Israel, but David seems to be more successful than Shaul, and there's the famous song of the women that Shaul ba'alafav, David b'divivatav, Shaul in his thousands, and David in his tens of thousands. Shaul gets immensely jealous, and he decides that he wants to figure out a way to have David killed, and so he offers David his daughter's hand in marriage, which is an ironic way of getting somebody killed. But the price for marrying his daughter is that he has to go out and kill all of these Philistines. And David is hopeful that Shaul is hopeful that it will eventually lead to David's own death. Unfortunately for Shaul, it doesn't. And more unfortunate for the Philistines, because David is extraordinarily successful, kills all these Philistines. And in the end, Shaul refuses to give him his daughter's hand in marriage. And he ends up marrying the other daughter, namely Michal. That's Perek Yud Chet. Then we have a series of events that all relate to Shaul's paranoia on David and his fear that David is trying to take over the kingdom, that David is trying to kill him, that David is trying to, especially after he becomes his son-in-law. And so he throws the spear at him, he throws the spear at him twice. He has a whole conversation with Michal. Michal says on the wedding night, David, leave, run away. This is not going to end well. My father wants to kill you. And so David runs. And that's where, from Perek of Aleph to Perek of Gimel, we have a series of stories where David is on the run, hiding in caves and in the Midbar, and fighting in defense of various cities, and ultimately kind of navigating, gathering together his band of 400 or 600 men who will fight with him in a fight of survival against the Philistines in the local region. And that is all taking place in these chapters. From chapter 23 to 27 of Shmuel Aleph, he fights in defense of the city of Keilah when attacked by the Philistines. But then Shaul finds out that he's there, so David has to again flee. We have the story of Naval HaKarmeli, where he is running around defending the local shepherds from the attacks of the Philistines and the Amalekites who are in the south, and other Shosei Midbar, other warriors in the desert, and sort of earning his survival from the defense of the Yishuvim in the south in the area of Shevet Yehuda. And that's how Sefer Shmuel more or less ends. Then you have the battle with, he has to run for his life. He runs to Achish, king of the Plishtim, and seeks solace or refuge by the Plishtim. And then, of course, Shaul has to go and fight the Plishtim in Har Gilboa in the north. And David comes back to Tziklag. The rest of that story, he fights against Amalek. All of that is here in the end of Shmuel Aleph. So he's fighting Keilah, he's fighting the Amalek, and he's fighting for his life. Sefer Shmuel Bet begins after the fall of Shaul on the battlefield. David is king of Yehuda, and now there is a civil war that emerges between Yehuda and Yisrael because Ishbosheth ben Shaul is appointed king in Shaul's stead, led by the very capable military leader of Avner ben Ner. And so Yoav leading the army of David, fighting against Avner leading the army of Ishbosheth. Eventually, as that battle continues, Avner loses heart and he decides to come to make peace with David. Yoav comes in from the various campaigns in the south and kills Avner. Not our story for today. And then finally, the Ishbosheth dies and the two armies unite and the people come to David and they say, you be king over all of Israel. David emerges as king of a united Israel, the first thing he does is sets his sight on a new capital, namely Yerushalayim. He goes and he conquers Yerushalayim in a very desperate and difficult battle, which we talked about when we talked about Yerushalayim in chapter 5. Till this day, it's unclear how David conquers the great hill of the Jebusite fortress of Yerushalayim. But that he does. And then the end of chapter 8, sorry, end of chapter 5, after the conquest of Yerushalayim, what is described are three major campaigns against the Plishtim. The Plishtim will hear that David has emerged as the king of Israel, fight against him, and in three major campaigns, David essentially destroys the Philistine threat in the land of Israel once and for all, ending in the beginning of chapter 8 with the taking of Metek Ha'amar, the city of Gat, capital of the Philistine stronghold. And from that point forward, David has literally has ended the Philistine threat in the land of Israel. That which began with Shaul has now emerged as sort of most of David's battles have been with the Plishtim. The all of Shmuel Aleph up until Perachet, the primary enemy of Israel has been the Plishtim together with Amalek in the Negev, and David has removed that threat. It's an interesting phrase, and I'll share it with you. Actually, you don't have it here. But let me show you one pasuk in Shmuel Aleph. When Shaul was appointed king, Shmuel says, God says to Shmuel, Mashem galad ozen Shmuel, yom achad lifnei bo Shaul v'leimor, ka'et machar eshlach elecha ish me'eretz Binyamin. Tomorrow I'm going to send you somebody from the land of Binyamin. You will anoint him as king of Israel, m'shachto l'nagid al ami Yisrael. This is chapter 9 in Shmuel Aleph. V'oshia et ami miyad plishtim. Ki ra'iti et ami ki ba tzakato elai. Shaul's mission mandate was to deal with the threat of the Philistines. So I said that Shaul was chosen primarily because his was the one, right, being tall and strong, he could deal with the war of champions with the Plishtim. Shaul's mission was to destroy the Plishtim. Shaul failed. And because he failed, into that moment, into that role, stepped David. So David's fight against Goliath is very symbolic because it basically says that David has now taken on the role that was initially the mission of Shaul. So Shaul failed, David will succeed, and David succeeds here for the really as the last major battle with the Plishtim and eradicates the threat, existential threat, of the Plishtim forever. Chapter 8 and chapter 10 of Shmuel Bet, as you remember, were connected, and they deal with a series of battles. Moab, unclear whether Moab is the first battle. It's the first battle in the list, where he goes and he fights against Moab, and he uses a rope to determine who lives and who dies, like drawing lots, and kills one third of all the inhabitants. Unclear whether that is, in the Medrash, it's an act of revenge for Moab having slaughtered his family when David was on the run and he left his family there by the king of Moab to as safeguarding against Shaul, who was going to kill them. And in the end, Moab, king of Moab, slaughter them all, and so David goes and he takes revenge on the city of Moab. That's Chazal's understanding of the Battle of Moab. Another possibility is that it's actually later in the chapter, but nonetheless, then he has this interaction with the king of Ammon, where he sends a message, he sends a delegation to express condolences to the new king of Ammon for the death of his father. And the response of the king was to take the soldiers and publicly shame them, shave their beards, cut their clothes off. And so David decides, as an act of vengeance against him, he sends Yoav to attack the city of Ammon. Ammon, Yoav comes with his warrior band to attack the city of Ammon, unrealizing that he's going to call for allies, all of the resources of Aram in the north. And so suddenly Yoav finds himself fighting the combined forces of, or the two front attack of Ammon in the north and Aram Damesek, Aram Tzovar, Aram Mishmacha, Ishtov, all of the northern Syrian forces coming around from the south. David enters into that battle and eventually they are victorious. Then he sends his forces up into the north, into the Golan and beyond, to fight against the united forces of Aram as revenge for their participation in the Battle of Ammon. Then he sends Yoav to Edom for 6 months, Pasuk in Melachim Aleph, where for 6 months Yoav conducts a campaign and slaughters all of the males of Edom in the south, most likely reference to the army. Then maybe that's where the Battle of Moab takes place, and finally the Battle of Rabbah ben Ammon. So from Ammon Battle 1 until Ammon Battle 2, that's the year in between that we're talking about.
Do we know the chronology from Mephorshim or other, what the age of David was at the first war with Goliath and at the time of this last war? How many years are we talking about here?
Many. Goliath, he's a young boy. He's a young man. Whether he's 17 or whether he's younger, he's certainly young. David reigns for 40 years. He dies at the age of 70. So he's 30 when he is king in Hebron. So all of this is taking place more or less 10, let's call it service of Shaul from whatever he is, 20 till 30. Comes to 7 years he reigns in Yehuda before the death of Shaul. So 7 years after the death of Shaul, he becomes king in Yehuda. So that's the age of 30. 7 years in Hebron. Then at the age of 37, he comes to Yerushalayim, dies at the age of 70. So the rest of this is the other 33 years.
So are we talking then about the last year of David's life now?
No, not at all. You see, this is
so still, he's not 70 yet.
This is still Bathsheba, and then he has to have as many children that he has, etc. So, this is not by any means the end of his life. How old he is exactly, I don't know, but I'm going to guess. Sorry, say that again?
He could be 50 or more.
Yeah, okay. But
I'm just saying that's 30 plus years that he's been fighting these wars.
Oh, so on the one hand, he's been fighting these wars for over 30 years. He's clearly, there's something to be said for the fact that he is tired, no question. Why is he tired now and not tired here and not tired here and not tired here and not tired? I don't know. Why suddenly he's tired? I have a theory I'll share with you in a second. But clearly he has been fighting for a very long time. But the notion that he's had a year off and therefore he shouldn't be tired, that the Malbim says, that I'm not convinced about. Clearly this is a long list of, essentially since David emerged on the stage of the story, David has been a warrior. He's been a warrior, and he's a poet, and he's a singer, and he's a composer, and he writes Tehillim, etc. But at the end of the day, his first and primary strength is he's been a warrior, either in the underground group that is running from city to city and hiding in the early chapters of his life, or as the king of the southern tribe of Judah against, as a single tribe against the tribes of Israel in the civil war against Shaul's descendants, or as the United Kingdom of Israel after the conquest of Yerushalayim, deal with the Philistine threat, right? Alliances with foreign powers, Ammon and Hadadezer and the enemies of foreign powers, alliances with foreign powers. By the time all of this emerges, by the time we finish chapter 10, and the battle of the collective forces of Aram in the north, David is, just to put in perspective, This is a map of David's battles in Sefer Shmuel Aleph. So this is where David is from the time that he is running from Shaul and eventually becomes king in Hebron. This is David in the south. As David emerges after he conquers Yerushalayim and he conquers the Plishtim, Gat, Metag Bnei Amon, Metag HaAma of the Plishtim, he then turns his sights to the Rabbah and Amon on the east side of the Yarden. And there Aram gets involved, and that led to the Battle of Aram in the north, and that led to the conquest of the area up until the Euphrates. And by the time we're all done, David's kingdom, instead of being this section here, I can't annotate while I'm recording, okay. Besides being this section here, has now expanded all the way into this section up here, all the way to the Euphrates. David commands an extraordinary empire. So much so that in chapter 10, we have a description of other nations coming to David to make peace with him because he is the local regional power that they all want to make peace with. The problem is, if I look at this chart again, you'll notice this big, heavy black line in the middle. I put that there because there's a fundamental difference between all of David's campaigns up until chapter 8 and the four major campaigns that David fights in chapter 8 and 10, namely Ammon, Aram, Edom, and Moab. Okay, so just to put in perspective, all of this from here down essentially is one major story and campaign of a battle against, it starts maybe with Moab, I think it starts with Ammon, then Aram in the south, then Aram in the north, then Edom, and then Moab.
These are wars of expansion.
So number one, the wars of expansion. And you can see that in the campaign. When I was going to get to that number two, but since you mentioned it, the first distinction to be made between this map and this map is where are these battles taking place? David
up Israel and outside
is further away from where he
right. So there's a geographic border here, and the geographic border is the Jordan River. Up until the final battle with the Plishtim, everything that David has done has been to fight on the east, on the west side of the Jordan River. The battles that we are describing here, Ammon, Moab, Ammon, Aram, Edom, etc., are all battles on the east side of the Jordan. Not only are there battles on the east side of the Jordan, but here, Ron, your comment earlier is correct. They're all battles outside of the boundary of the tribes of Israel. Meaning the Plishtim are in their kishkas, they're in their heartland. That's why the Plishtim have been such an intransigent enemy that they've been dealing with for so many years, because this is the heartland of Israel, and here the Plishtim trying to get a hold, right? The Plishtim destroy Shiloh. They get all the way up to Shechem. The Plishtim have been a thorn in their side literally since the day they entered into the land of Israel. By the time they're done, by the time David is king over all of Israel, he's all this purple are the tribes of Israel. That's all more or less settled, peaceful, controlled by David. And then suddenly we have a battle with Ammon, a battle with Moab, a battle with Edom, and a battle with Aram. And not only are these battles on the east side of the Jordan, but they're far away from the heartland of Israel. They're far away from the territory of the tribes of Israel. They're outside. They're wars of expansion. They're wars that have a very different feel. And the different field is not only in terms of the geographic location of these battles, but the moral fiber of these battles are questionable. Without getting into the core of the question, we saw some of this back in chapter 8, the battle with Moab. Vayachet Moab, Yismot Moab, Vayimadadim Bechevel, Ashkem Otam Arza, Yimaded Shnei Chavalim Lamit, Umulo Achevel Achayot, Vadim Moab, David Lavadav Nosei Mincha, Yismot Moab, and he measured them with a line. He laid them lie down on the ground, two lines to put to death, one line to keep alive. He drew lots, who would live and who would die. I get it. He wants to make sure that Moab will never again raise the threat to Israel, and that Moab will know their place, and that he was in charge in the region. But it's harsh. In the end of chapter 12, you have a similar situation with Ammon, and Ammon is the source of all the problems. Ammon is the source of the entire campaign. It starts with Ammon. Ammon is the one who invites Aram. Ammon is the one who enables Moab and Edom to get involved by allowing safe passage from Aram. Ammon is the one who ultimately is the battle with Yoav. Ammon is the source of all the problems here. And he finally, after over a year of a campaign that starts with Ammon, and Ammon invites Aram, and finally, he beats Ammon and he wins the battle. And we have the following description, which...
David goes to Rabbah, he fights against Rabbah.
He takes the crown of the deity, Milkom, or Molech, the crown of the his great heavy golden crown. David places it on his own head. And great spoils of the city. That the Amashirban is for the people that were there in Ammon. He took them, he put them under saws and under harrows of iron and under axes of iron and under brick kiln. And much has been written about the moral question of David's behavior in this battle. And the classic answer is that you're dealing with an empire, and you're dealing with region in which you have these nations that are themselves immoral and abhorrent, and you need to establish who's the boss, who's in charge. You need to make sure that never again will Ammon raise their heads against the kingdom of Israel. I get it. But it takes its toll. These are battles which have a very different moral fiber to them, character, in which they're fighting on the other side of the yard, and they're fighting far away from the house, from home. They're unclear. At some point or another, you have to raise the question. These are battles which you have no choice. This is the defensive battle. These are the battles for the integrity of the kingdom of Israel. This is wars of expansion, wars of conquest, wars of territory, wars of empire. Some point or another, this is unsustainable. At some point or another, they get tired. And Yoav is a warrior from the day one. You know, Yoav is a man of war. That's who he is. Yoav will never tire of war.
David's a poet.
David is a poet. And at some point in all of this, David loses faith in this battle. He stops believing in it. Listen, how many times has this happened to us? In America, we have countless examples of wars fought far away from home, which as time progresses, even the leadership of the country that goes to war loses faith in the war. We don't need to look far for such examples. And at some point or another, David says, you know what, Yoav, you're a man of war. You go deal with it. I'm done. Call me when it's done. Report to me. I'm done. And so after the Battle of Aram. We had no choice. He had to come. He had to fight. This is a massive world war of all the forces of Aram in the north. David has no choice. He has to go. And he fights and he fights and he fights. And then again to go back to Ammon. Yoav, go. I'm going back to Yerushalayim. I can't, this war, I can't stomach it anymore. And he goes back to Yerushalayim.
Rabbi, is there a description in the Battle of Aram compared to Moab and Edom where he decimates the male population?
No. Edom and Moab are the only ones. And I think Edom and Moab are retribution, the way I understand, especially the way I understand Moab, are retribution for having enabled Aram to enter into the territory because they gave safe passage to Aram into the battle.
And wasn't Ammon Rabbah a refuge for his parents when he was trying to...
No, Moab. According to Moab. The Medrash, that was Moab. The Medrash's explanation of why he deals so harshly with Moab.
Because they were a refuge, but not kind.
Right. So more or less, that's where we end up with, which is this moment in which... Sorry, I'm in the wrong parak. Let's go back to Parak Yud Aleph. In the moment in which David comes back to Yerushalayim. And he comes back to Yerushalayim because his heart is no longer in the battlefield. He no longer really believes in this battle. Let Yoav fight it. He comes back and he's going to... I can't say he's broken. There are other issues going on in his life that he has to address. This is not long after the crisis with Michal. We have to still come back to that question. And so he is burdened by the lack of an heir to the throne, burdened by the absence of Michal, the separation from Michal, the conflict with the house of Shaul. Now he's burdened by a war he really no longer believes in, and he's in Yerushalayim, and he goes to contemplate all of this by taking a nice long walk on the rooftop of his house. And there he sees Isha v'chetzet mi'al hagag. He sees a woman, wife of Uriah Hiti, wife of a soldier who is out on the battlefield of a war and devoting his life and his energy to a war and abandoning his wife, and he has maybe not even had a wedding night with, or he certainly doesn't have any children with. And this mercenary Hittite Uriah in his mind, who is devoting his life to a war that David himself no longer believes in. And
does anybody put together the fact that the slaughtering of the prisoners of war, in our hindsight, looking at it as a moral question, at least thinking there's a moral question to it, could that be the same weakness that led to his walking on the roof and looking at a woman?
Maybe, I don't know. They're two very different personalities. There's the poet passion personality and there's the warrior personality, and they operate differently. And David has an ability to synthesize them, but there are moments when one takes over the other. It's an interesting question. I haven't seen an address to it. But I do think that's more or less what we are introduced to here, is that David Yoshev B'Yerushalayim, because he has really lost his heart for the war that Yoav is fighting. And Uriah maybe senses that. And therefore Uriah's comment to him about how Adoni Yoav, my master Yoav is the one fighting the war. You, David, you've given up. You're sitting here in Yerushalayim. Right? So Uriah's in subordination. Yoav's in subordination. David is in Yerushalayim. And David's heart and passion is for this wife of the soldiers because he doesn't believe in the war anymore. And he's now feeling the pain of the widows, the living widows who are sitting in Yerushalayim. And as we say, the rest unfortunately takes a very tragic direction.
Rabbi.
So that's a context to this. Let me just finish the sentence. That's the context to this moment of David Yoshev B'Yerushalayim. Bezrat Hashem, next week, I will share with you another aspect of it that I think is complementary to what I said today, not in a challenge to, but nonetheless, I think that this was a kind of a glimpse at the overall context of how we ended up in this place. Yes, Alan, you had a question.
Yeah, I have a a problem with the issue that if David is tired of the war, why is he sending Yoav and additional soldiers to go to be in a war and to die? It seems at very best inconsistent and possibly
even immoral. You can't. One of the things you learn very quickly, and we learned this the hard way in modern history, is you can't just walk away from the battlefield. And David is tired of the battle because of he believes in it, but you can't walk away in the midst of the battle. You have to walk away victorious, otherwise you destroy the kingdom. That's why he says to Yoav, end this war at all costs, but quickly. End this war, be strong, be courageous, attack the city and end it. That's his solution. His solution is not to abandon the war. That would enable and empower his enemies. Then you're just going to find yourself back in the war a year later. Modern history is full of examples. You don't just walk away from the war in the middle. You need to finish it.
This is David's last war, correct? There was an internal conflict with either his sons or others.
Correct. After this, for many reasons, including the fact that he loses the kingdom after this, because of what happens with Bathsheba, he ends up losing everything. So that's a whole different piece. We'll get to that. All right.
Pretty dense.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Have a good week.
Remind me not to run for king.
Not an elective office, Ron.
Pardon?
It's not an elective office.
Oh, that's a good thing. Good for me. I'm so happy. Have a great week.
Take care. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.